Today on the On Enquirer podcast, Andre Stojakovic is back. The announcement, part two for Andre Stojakovic, as he announces he is withdrawing from the NBA draft and returning to Illinois for his senior season. A decision that makes a lot of sense and is not a huge surprise, as we have talked about over the last few months, but it is now official. Andre Stojakovic will not be in the NBA draft, which means he's returning to school and to Illinois. A lot of stay or go decisions have been announced, and for Illinois, what a big one, as they now return five of their top eight scorers from a Final Four team. Have some big pieces they have to replace, of course, in Keaton Wagler, legendary, all-time great for Illinois in just one season, potential top six NBA draft pick. Callum Boswell, obviously two-way player, a leader for this team. And Benham Rickhouse, who played a nice glue guy role and was very versatile defensively for them as well. But man, when you get Andre Stojakovic and David Mirkovic and Tomislav Ivicic and Zvonimir Ivicic and Jake Davis back, and then you add the talents of Stefan Vox, Quentin Coleman, now a five-star prospect, Lucas Murillo is a top 50 prospect himself. That's a pretty dang good roster. And we're going to talk about Andre Stojakovic and his second season at Illinois. What can he be? Why is he so important? Why did he decide to return to Illinois for another year? And what can he do with another year, or potentially two, in college basketball? Isaac Trotter, CBS Sports, our guy, the Illini Enquirer alum, now doing great things for our CBS Sports college basketball team, which I know I am biased, but I believe our basketball team is the best in the business. Adding a guy like Kyle Tucker and to what we already have with Adam Finkelstein, our great recruiting team led by Eric Bossy. But Isaac always has great insight, and he's starting to work on his Big Ten tiers. I'm interested to see where he goes there. We talk a little bit about who is in that top tier along with Illinois. So a fantastic basketball conversation, as always, with Isaac Trotter. And that's all coming up next, right here on the Illini Enquirer podcast. This episode of the Illini Enquirer podcast is brought to you by Columbia Street Roastery. That weather is definitely getting hotter. Summer is almost here. But now's the time to go check out the cold brew cans at Columbia Street Roastery. You can get them in town. If you're in downtown Champaign, go check out Columbia Street Roastery there, or go to the Yard in Urbana. Great setup there. But even if you are out of town, you can get Columbia Street Roastery smooth, easy to drink, perfect on the go cold brew coffee cans. I love their nitro brew, so go in locally and check that out. But you can get these cans delivered to you straight at home. And you can get 10% off your first order at csrcoffee.com by using code Illini all the way at csrcoffee.com. You also get free shipping on orders over $45. And if you're iced tea fans in these hot summer months, try out their iced tea packets to make freshly brewed iced tea at home. They have everyone's favorite flavors. You can try out their Fiesta Mexicana. It's a sangria-like flavor with fruits of mango, lime, strawberry, orange, and peach, or just go with their traditional. It's a good, smooth, traditional black iced tea. So visit csrcoffee.com to get 10% off your first order with code Illini all the way, plus free shipping on orders over $45 at csrcoffee.com. All right, we have our answers, so that's why we go to the guy with all the answers. It's Isaac Trotter, CBS Sports college basketball writer. Isaac Trotter, we got the stay or go decisions for college basketball done. How are you feeling about it? Because you've been on this beat for about 2 months now.
Yeah, 2 months, and especially in the last like 3 weeks, it's really ramped up. But it's good to have some clarity, and it's kind of nice to see that not much has changed. You know, at the NBA Draft Combine, I wrote this piece, and they wanted predictions for every single guy. All 22 stuck with their original lean after the NBA Draft Combine. So I think sometimes you see certain navigations where people are like, oh, you know, he really helped himself at the Combine, or oh, look at all these workouts he scheduled. I kind of think a lot of that is fluff. And I think for the most part, the financial aspect of this has made some of these calls very, very self-explanatory. And college basketball is a major winner today because there are some really, really high-level players coming back to school to set up a really, really big season.
Obviously, we'll talk all about Andre Stojakovic in Illinois, but you led me there, so I'm going to go with it, Isaac. And almost every guy projected outside the top 25, outside of what Allen Graves, is staying in school. What do we take away for this both for college basketball, which most people listening to this are college basketball fans first, but also the NBA draft, where the NBA is trying to find good talent in that 20 to 40 range, and there's been some good players. Slim pickings right there, it seems like, right now.
Really slim pickings. And I think it's a sign that playing in the G League isn't that fun, right? Like, I think a lot of these guys like have a chance to make life-changing money here in college. And this is arguably the best time it's ever been to play college basketball. So the idea of like risking taking, you know, a two-way for $565,000 compared to what you could get in full guaranteed money in college, just the risk reward just is not there. And I think it does reiterate the fact that like being patient is a good thing to get to the NBA. You don't have to start your clock at 20, 21 years old anymore. You can wait a little bit and be an impact player right away. So yeah, for the NBA side, you're looking at a lot of seniors like a Kylan Boswell, right? Who's now going to have a chance to be drafted in that second round. I could see a lot more draft and stash type of opportunities with some of the international market as well in that second round. But you're kind of looking for your Sion Jameses of the world, right? Like, remember, Sion James is a really good connective piece for Duke 2 years ago. And then Charlotte took him in the second round last year, and he turned into be a nice connective piece for the Hornets when he was healthy. I think that's the type of players and prospects that teams in the NBA franchises are looking at in those second rounds, because there's just not, you know, that big swing that you could take with a high level, you know, high impact guy that could potentially turn into something really, really fascinating down the road.
Yeah, I don't know if NBA GMs are pumped about it, but as college fans, I'm kind of pumped about seeing some of these seniors. Like, if a Kylan Boswell gets drafted, that's a really cool moment and a great opportunity for him. But like the European draft and stash, how many of those guys are out there, Isaac? Because most of those guys probably come to college basketball more nowadays than not.
Yeah, not many. And now more often than not, like, it makes more sense for them to come to college basketball and start cashing in, because they also get way more eyeballs on them, right? I think that we've seen a lot of examples of the international market where, you know, those agents over there are like, we got to get them to college as fast as possible, because they get to be seen a little bit more. And honestly, they just get to show their game at a higher level. There's a few less questions to be had when you kind of go through the process. So yeah, it's going to be a weird second round. I think you're going to see some interesting names. I mean, remember last year in the end of the second round, like Talen Peter was a name that got drafted right out of Liberty, and the Pacers took him. And everybody's watching the draft like, huh? I'd be curious if we have a couple more of those. What? Who is that guy that just got drafted here in the late 50s?
Well, you mentioned a lot of these decisions just made sense. And all along, it just made sense for Andre Stojakovic to return to Illinois, given his draft stock, that he was not going to be guaranteed a lot of money, if anything, because he could be a two-way guy, the money he's going to get at Illinois, and the fact that he's a guy that still has some unseen upside, right? Like, so what did you make of Andre Stojakovic officially announcing for the second time that he is returning to Illinois?
Maybe he just likes getting a lot of likes on Instagram on all of those posts, right?
Don't we all, Isaac?
Yeah, it certainly helps a little bit. But yeah, again, no-brainer to come back to school for Illinois. And I think he has a chance to set himself up to be one of the elite two-way wings in college basketball next year, and maybe the best in the Big Ten. And that ability to stay at one place for a second year isn't something that we've seen from him throughout his career. So I think there's another level of growth that we'll be able to put together for his senior season. Also, it gives him a chance to cash in on that 5-5 rule, right? Again, you're not just talking about this year. It's also about that next year later, where a chance to have another year of eligibility. If you skip that now, you could miss out on another earning potential cycle. So it just made too much sense for him to come back to school. And I didn't sense a lot of, you know, frustration from Illinois' camp that he went through this process. And I didn't sense a lot of panic from them either throughout this entire process either. Because, you know, look, there were concessions made with who and what Illinois was recruiting in the transfer portal to get Andre back. So if those concessions were made on the Illinois side, I think this was a good opportunity for Andre to hold up his end of the bargain, because he knew he was super important for this team to reach its goals. Illinois can't be the team that it wants to be without Andre, and him coming back to school kind of makes a win-win for both sides.
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say he's the most irreplaceable guy on the roster, but there is a case for that, right? Like, Tomislav, maybe not, because Zvonimir's there as well, and David Mirkovic does a lot of things Tommy does. Stefan Fox is a shot maker, is really important for them. But why is Andre Stojakovic so important to what this team is?
such a good blend piece, I think, for what you want to be and what you could be as well. You know, I think there's a very good opportunity that David Mirkovich is Illinois' best player next year. I would handicap Stefan Vaux as Illinois' most important player heading into this offseason and into next year. But I think Andre is that blend. He kind of connects the dots. And frankly, I think for Illinois, this came down to, do we recruit John Blackwell or do we retain Andre Stojakovic? And for this roster, even though John Blackwell is a better player than Andre Stojakovic, I think Stojakovic fits this team at a better level. Why? He's 6'7" and he is a bigger addition at the wing. John Blackwell is 6'4". If you talk about a, you know, your backcourt is a Quentin Coleman, Stefan Vaux, John Blackwell, it's interesting, but it's a little bit on the smaller side. Now Illinois gets to keep its elite size at every single position, when it'll be Vaux, Coleman, and Stojakovic. And I think defensively, there's more meat on the bone because now Stojakovic can guard up and down the lineup a little bit different than what Blackwell could. So just for how much this matters for this roster, I think Stojakovic is just a no-brainer fit to get him back. And being able to keep somebody that you already know is so much higher floor than having to add someone that you think is going to be a good idea, but you can't really, you know, guarantee that they're going to come in and be an awesome player for you.
Yeah, let's dive into that Stojakovic-Blackwell thing a little bit more, because I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know if you have Stojakovic if you go get Blackwell and prioritize him. And this is kind of the sign of, like, it's not just fantasy basketball, right? It's John Blackwell on Illinois would score more points than Andre Stojakovic. But does he make your team better when you have Vaux and Quentin Coleman already? And you wonder about Coleman's role if they had a guy like Blackwell, right? So that's where this staff is going all in on continuity, right? And if you take away Andre Stojakovic and decide to go get John Blackwell, you're taking away some of that. And then also, like, he just kind of fits in the defensive part of it, his ability to get to the rim and finish at the rim. It just makes a lot more sense roster-wise and continuity-wise, even though John Blackwell, on paper, might be a better player overall.
And I think the ability that Andre showed to play off the ball last year and find ways to impact winning in that regard as a cutter, as a slasher, off of those stampede drives, is something that's really easy to translate and kind of fill that void again this year. Because, you know, I think you're looking at Keaton Wagler's pick-and-roll reps. A lot of those are going to go to Stefan Vaux. You're looking at Kylan Boswell's pick and roll reps. A lot of those are going to go to Quentin Coleman. If you mix in Blackwell, how do you make that work, right? Like, that's three guys who technically need to have the ball in their hands. And I still think that there's part of the pitch to get Andre back for a second year is that he will get a few more on-ball reps. And that's certainly going to be part of the calculus with this group. But Andre's ability to play off the ball and slash and get downhill and put pressure on the rim and also be a transition menace, I think, is a major, major differentiator for this group. Because let's just be honest, like, this half court offense is not going to be as good as it was last year, right? That was like one of the elite half court offenses in all of college basketball. Alabama was the only team that scored more points in half court settings than Illinois. It's going to be a little bit down.
You probably do not have an All American guard. Like, I am high on Vaux, I'm high on Coleman, but you probably do not have an All American top five, top six pick at guard this year.
Yeah, like, your half-court offense is still going to be good. It's just not going to be, like, special, the best of the Brad Underwood era like it was last year. And I think in order to make that ground up, your transition offense, which you kind of got away from a little bit last year, has to tick up a bit. And Andre is the huge part of that, because he, I think, on paper, shapes up to be the best transition scorer on this roster. And they need it. They need that 4 to 6 to 8 points a game that he can give them in transition. And I think his counting stats, it would reflect in that as well, too.
There was inconsistency to Andre last year, especially early on, trying to figure out his role after the injury. But there were some real big highs, a lot of 20-plus point games, a lull after his injury. And you're kind of wondering, what's his role? Will he be on this team next year? And then the NCAA tournament happens, and he was unbelievable in that run on both sides of the ball. So how does Andre get better in year four of college? As you said, Isaac, a very important point. His first year, too, with the same team. How do you think he can get better?
Yeah, I think it's just stacking those good days one on top of the next. And, you know, I think his game is a lot more high floor than people think. Like, it doesn't need to be this roller coaster because I think he takes higher quality shots, right? Like, he had a ton of rim pressure last year. He's able to get to the free throw line. And I think his free throw rate can tick up a little bit more, assuming that he takes a few of those Keaton Wagler reps. And that ability defensively and on the glass kind of is just like the cherry on top, because he has to be the best perimeter defender for this team on a night-to-night basis. He has to be an elite-level rebounder if Illinois wants to keep its rebounding margin intact. That's how they win the shot volume game. He has to be a huge part of that. And then that consistent ability to break it down, find a weak defender, and go to work is just kind of that cheat code, I think, for this offense. It can be that get-out-of-jail-free card on some rough nights, because you kind of look up and down the Big Ten, like, there's going to be nights where Andre is going to be guarded by some pretty weak perimeter defenders. Like, go down the list. You can find that beard, right, on a lot of these different rosters. He has to be that guy that is punishing that mismatch consistently. And then you mix in a few more of those threes, and then you mix in some of the transition, and then you mix in a little bit more free throws. You're talking about a guy that could easily average 17 points a game next year without, you know, a crazy massive difference in what his role is. It's just a little bit more usage. So I think just finding ways to stack those good days back one on top of the next speaks your offseason work, right? And it's something that Illinois has done with those year two transfers over the years.
He showed at Stanford and at Cal that he can be a capable three-point shooter, but just watching that, and you can see these like still pictures of Andre's shot form, is that fixable? Like, what do you think is the key to Andre hitting 33-34% of his threes?
Taking good ones is probably the right answer to this one, but you're right. Like, if you stand in the corner and watch Andre shoot threes with his sidewinder type of form, you're like, that has no chance to go in.
There's no margin for error.
Yeah. Like, the physics of this just does not make sense for the ball to like go off his fingers a certain way. And it just doesn't make sense for that ball to go in. Now, the question is, how much can you change that in an offseason? I don't know. You know, I think that's something that like Andre's would have to be all in on doing. And there would definitely be some growing pains was doing something like that. But if he takes good ones next year, I do think he can make a few more threes. And Illinois needs him to. Like, they just absolutely need him to if he wants to honestly reach the peak of his powers, if his team wants to get their 99th percentile outcome, and if he wants to raise his draft stock. So we're not kind of sitting here, you know, next May at this time being like, well, Andre shot, you know, 31% on threes again. He probably should consider coming back to school, because even though he's athletic, even though he's long, even though he does, you know, maybe money's not the biggest issue. You know, the NBA just doesn't have a lot of room for a spacing wing that can't space the floor.
Yeah, so the upside here, and I'll just let you see if you agree with me here. The upside would be Andre's all Big Ten, one of the best two-way players in the country, and potentially slides into a first-round slot in what is a weaker draft next year, right? And kind of emerges late like Terrence Shannon Jr. did in year two, makes that year two leap like Terrence did, right? The downside would be kind of the same player. The shot doesn't fall as much, and he returns for a fifth year of college and makes a bunch of money. Like, that seems like a pretty good deal for Andre.
Yeah, I'll take that math, right? It's a no-lose situation there for him. And that's why I just think his floor is really high. Like, I just don't see him bottoming out this year. You know, I think he's wired the right way. I think Illinois does a good job with their off-court, just kind of understanding the DNA of how these players tick. And yeah, I think there's a chance where maybe Vox takes the show. Maybe Coleman's a little bit better than we expect. Maybe Merck is just, you know, an all Big Ten type of player, and Andre settles into that fourth or fifth option, right? If so, like, you kind of go down the Big Ten, like, there's just not a fourth or fifth option that looks like what Andre does. And that, if that's his floor, that's a really, really high floor outcome. And the thing with this team that you're starting to notice is that the beauty and balance game plan that they had last year, I think a lot of that could showcase itself again this year. And Andre's going to be a huge part of that, because it won't be his night every night. But I think just finding ways that even on the nights where he's got 6 points on 3-for-8 shooting, he's the best defender on the team. He's impacting the glass with 5 or 6 rebounds. He's being able to be more of a playmaker, which is something that he needs to add to his game. He was very like, there were times where it was like a black hole when Andre had the ball, where it's like, okay, he's either scoring, turning the basketball over, or missing a shot. finding ways to add more strong decision making to his profile, I think would help boost his NBA draft stock as well.
Yeah, we talk about returning for another year because 5 for 5 is very likely to pass in the next couple months. So that's why we're talking about that. You mentioned Quentin Coleman. I mean, this is one of the bigger rises we've seen out of a prospect during his senior year. It was about 80 before his senior year started. Goes to 35 and now to 13 in the 24/7 sports rankings. He just made USA's U18 select national team. What are your expectations now for Quentin Coleman as a freshman? I mean, it's hard to rein in freshman expectations right now for Illinois, given the last three one-and-dones we've seen.
Well, I used Jace Richardson as a comp last year for Keaton Wagler. A little bit undersold that one, as he turned out to be one of the best freshmen that the Big Ten has ever seen. But I think I'm running it back this year with Coleman. I think that Jace Richardson comp is interesting, right? At 6'3", 6'4", maybe doesn't have like the amazing measurables or just jump out of the gym athleticism, but really smart, high feel, good shooter, like a really good shooter, and then competes. That's the thing I really liked about Jace, is that he just really, really competed on the defensive end of the floor to earn more trust, to get more run offensively. That's exactly what I think I have at my expectations are for Coleman. And everybody I've talked to about Quentin Coleman that's seen him play in person, like, I can't find anybody to say anything bad about it. Like, they just all love his like all of the immeasurables with him. Like, it's just like how he competes, how he plays on defense, how he offensive rebounds, how he makes shots, how he takes the easy stuff. Like, all of that stuff is something that I think you could see him assimilate into a, you know, pretty top heavy roster and find ways to impact positively in a lot of different ways. So I don't expect him to be an all Big Ten guy. You know, I think there's a chance he could be, you know, an all freshman team selection, no doubt. But, you know, 12-4-4 with 36-37% from 3-point range, that'd be a really, really nice addition for this team, and he's going to plug a lot of gaps as a, you know, a day one starter.
Guys, I'm pushing 40. I've noticed the older I get, the less forgiving even a couple drinks can be the next morning. You feel like you're responsible. You have a couple beers, you get home at a reasonable time, drink some water, eat some food. You do everything right, yet you still wake up feeling kind of off the next day. Foggy, low energy, not fully yourself. That's why I tried Cheers Restore. And honestly, I was skeptical at first, but the difference the next morning really surprised me. I slept better, woke up feeling way more normal, and actually felt productive the next day instead of dragging through the morning. This is Cheers Restore after alcohol aid. You take it up after your last drink or before bed, and it works while you sleep. Cheers says you'll wake up feeling at least 50% better or your money back. It helps your body metabolize alcohol more efficiently and supports liver health with ingredients like DHM and cysteine. Cheers is backed by doctors, PhDs, and over 1,000 verified clinicians. They've sold over 50 million doses. It's available at Target, CVS, and Walgreens. But take Cheers Restore after your last drink or before bed and wake up feeling at least 50% off better or your money back. For a limited time, listeners are getting 20% off their order by using code Illini at cheershealth.com. Just head to cheershealth.com and use code Illini for 20% off. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Illini Inquirer sent you. Shout out to Bart Torvik for giving us the early prognostications based on the metrics of these teams. He currently has Illinois number 4 behind Duke, Florida, and Houston. Illinois could very well play two of those teams in the non-conference, which is awesome. But what would make them a top 5 team and a Big Ten title favorite, because they're the highest ranked Big Ten team in the Torvik rankings here?
Rebounding and balance, right? I think rebounding is something that can give you a very, very high floor. I expect that high floor with this group. When you have David Mirkovic, when you have Tomislav Ivicic, when you can rotate in, you know, Zvonimir Ivicic, you know, Jake Davis will rebound for his position. You know, Stefan Vox will rebound for his position. Illinois is going to be one of the biggest teams in the Big Ten next year. And when you rebound at a high level and then you add in the balance, that's going to be a huge factor. Now, I looked this up. Last year, Illinois had 8 guys that scored at least 15 points in a game. I don't think Illinois, this roster, has 8, right? I think it may be closer to 6 or 7, depending on how things shake out. But they had 5 guys who scored 20 multiple times last year. Could that happen for this group this year? I think that's in the range of potential outcomes. And as we've seen in the NBA playoffs, like, it's great to have a star in like SGA with what the Thunder have. But the Thunder are winning the series where you know, they're up 3-2 in the series because Alex Crusoe can go get you 20 one night. And then one night it's a Jared McCain night. And then one night, you know, you see Isaiah Hartenstein have 15 and 15. I think something like that could be in play for Illinois. where Fox can be a threat to score 20, and Merck can be a threat to score 20, and Tommy can be a threat to score 20, and Andre can be a threat to score 20, and Coleman can be a threat to score 15 to 18 on a night when he has the right matchup. That gives you a chance to be a really, really high floor team, especially in a Big Ten that I think is a little bit watered down.
So what could keep them from ultimately becoming a Final Four, Big Ten national title contender? Like, I think of Purdue, really good team last year, gets to an Elite Eight, but just they never quite felt like Isaac. Like, I was like, yeah, that's going to be a national title contender. Sure, they can make a Final Four run with the right matchups, but what could keep Illinois from being that Final Four caliber team like they were last year?
Keaton Wagler was so good, and you don't have a Keaton Wagler. It's interesting, though, because I think thinking about teams offensively and defensively is an interesting exercise. So let's just, again, like we talked about earlier with Illinois, Illinois was second last year in offensive efficiency overall, one of the best half-court offenses in the sport. I don't expect that this year. I think the offense is going to be good. I don't think it's going to be as good as that. I think you could probably say, okay, there's a little bit of a dip there offensively. Maybe you're 10th nationally in offensive efficiency. Defensively, Illinois was 20th last year. Could you make a case Illinois is a lot worse defensively with this roster? I think that's something we have to talk about, right? Like, let's go position by position. Is Kylan Boswell a better defender than Quentin Coleman?
Yes.
Yes. Is Keaton Wagler a better defender than Stephon Vaux? So those are your 2 point of attack defenders right there that like are a little bit worse. So you know you're not going to have elite level rim protection when Tommy Vučić is on the floor, right? And you are a little bit on the slower end with some of the athletes that you've added. Like, there's a chance Illinois isn't as good defensively next year. So you're a little worse offensively, you're a little worse defensively. Like, that's in play for this group. Now they have to blend, they have to get better, they have to connect the dots. I think some of the role players have to get up there, but that's the bare outcome for this group. Is like, hey, we just don't quite have the same personnel as last year. Maybe we're not quite as special offensively. Maybe our defense takes a little bit of a step back. I don't expect that, but I do think it's something that is certainly fair to talk about with this group right now.
But assuming health, the four still feels like, what are we talking about, 24, 25 wins? You know what I mean?
Totally. And that's the beautiful part about this group is like I don't foresee them dropping out of the top 15 nationally on KenPom all year. Like, this is a top 15 group at minimum. And then you look at this Big Ten, like, there's no super team in the Big Ten this year. There's no Michigan. There's no Purdue that's bringing all this back. You know, the Mike LaTulip, how many top 30 scorers are coming back? If you look at it in the Big Ten, there's only six in the Big Ten coming back. Two of those will play for Illinois next year, and Andre Stojakovic and David Mirkovic. No other team has two top 30 guys coming back. Then you add in, oh, how many top 30 guys did we steal from another high major league? The Big Ten only added five. So, like, I think the league is going to be a little bit more watered down this year. It's not going to be quite as awesome as it was last year. You're not going to see, you know, the Bennett Sturts, Donovan Dent, Braden Smith, Bruce Thornton, like, elite-level point guard play up and down the league. I think Illinois can be worse and finish higher in the Big Ten than they did.
That's a great point.
Because that's just how the league is shaping up to be. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I do think that the Big Ten is going to be a little bit down compared to last year. And maybe Illinois isn't quite as good as they were last year. But that doesn't mean you can't win the league, especially in this iteration of the Big Ten. And that's the type of conversation you've put yourself into with this type of retention of like, hey, we are walking in next year being like, if these things click and Stephon Vaux is as good as we think he can be, Illinois is the best team in the Big Ten. And as of right now, if you put Illinois number one in the Big Ten, I wouldn't argue with you one bit.
Yeah, and I've started the offseason thinking that at the end of the day, I think Michigan and Illinois will be the two elite teams in this league again. And that certainly could be the case. I mean, getting back Elliott Cadeau and Trey McKinney, and then adding guys like Brandon McCoy, a five-star freshman, Theom Estrella to that front court, like, that's a very talented team. But I thought going into the offseason that Rez Johnson Jr. would probably be back. Even though I thought he could be a top 20 draft pick, it seemed like everyone else had him late first. And I thought, yeah, he'll be an All-American, and that'll be – Michigan will be the number one team. With him gone and obviously Mara gone, I mean, they brought in some really good talent, and Dusty May's a heck of a coach, but they're not as infallible as I thought. Like, even though I think Cadeau and McKinney, that's a hell of a backcourt. Like, I think they're going to be phenomenal. It's just you're replacing a legendary front court with the three guys that are probably all going lottery.
I think Dusty May would admit that as well on the record. Like, this roster is not as good as it was last year. And, you know, we talked about it last year at this time, like the amount of five-star caliber players that they had on their roster. You add in Yaxel Lendeborg, who was the five-star transfer, and all of the different five-star type of recruits that they had, like the pedigree of that Michigan roster was nuts. And if it had been able to come together like it did, there was a really high ceiling outcome. This year, I think it is a little bit different. And I think Michigan is a top 10 team, and you look at their roster compared to others, like it's certainly in the mix, but there is no Yaxel Lendeborg on this roster. And I would have been absolutely petrified of Michigan if their starting lineup was Elliot Cadeau at the one, Trey McKinney at the two, Juke Harris at the three, JP Estrella at the four, and Merez Johnson at the five. Like, I'm petrified. Yeah. Like, that team is like destroying. Juke Harris chooses to go to Tennessee, Merez chooses to stay in the draft. And now this Michigan roster has a few more holes. So they're still really, really good. But like I said earlier, there is no super team in the Big Ten this year. Maybe Illinois turns into that. Maybe Michigan turns into that. But on paper, I do think that there's an opening for some teams to certainly, you know, push them, because these rosters aren't quite as, you know, special as they were a year ago.
Jeremy Fears Jr. kind of had the Andre Stojakovic decision. Like, we all kind of knew where that one was going to go, but he waited even longer than Andre. But he is back, I would imagine. Big Ten preseason player of the year, which I think he's deserving of, him, David Mirkovich, and
Price Sanford.
Price Sanford, yeah, was the other guy. Yeah. But Michigan State, again, retention is the big key here, right? Cohen Carr, Jordan Scott, Kurtang, all really good players. Cam Ward. And then they add a McDonald's All-American and Josiah Jervis. Obviously a lot to replace in that front court, though, Isaac. But what do you think of that Michigan State roster? Can they win the Big Ten? Can that be Izzo's, you know, next team that wins a title when they're kind of a little bit underdogs, even though most are going to project them as a top 12 team, I would imagine?
Yeah, I mean, that backcourt's sick. Like, just sick. Jordan Scott's an awesome perimeter point of attack defender. I think he'll take another stride. Jeremy Fears, for all of his antics, right? Just an unbelievable savant, basketball savant, with his ability to pick the teams apart. You know, Josiah Jervis, like you talked about, the freshman coming in, absolute bucket getter. I would also throw in Carlos Medlock Jr. I've seen a little bit of his high school tape. Can really score off the bench as well. Then Cohen Carr, Kurtang. Like, that's a backcourt that I really, really like. But it's weird because I do think Michigan State has a little bit more boom bust in their profile, I would say, this year, because this front court, they've lost some major pieces. Like, Carson Cooper turned himself into one of the best defensive players in the Big Ten last year. He could switch. He could play at the level. He could play aggressive defenses. He could play passive defenses. They could do whatever you wanted him to do. And he was awesome in that regard. You know, and obviously Jackson Kohler was one of their best offensive players as well, and an amazing rebounder. That front court is going to be a little bit of a work in progress. They've added Anton Bonke out of Charlotte. We've seen him at the high major ranks before at Providence, and it didn't go well, right? But he's huge, and there's a chance for him to be a good player, right? They have a lot riding on Ethan Taylor, a freshman who I'm not super high on as a player. He's more of a prospect than a player at this point. But maybe if his development gets up to curve or speeds that up, he could potentially be an impactful player. So it's a little bit more boom or bust for Michigan State, whereas last year it felt like their front court led to a really, really high floor because you knew they were going to rebound, you knew they were going to defend, and you knew they were going to run and transition. This year, I think they have the best backcourt in the Big Ten, and just an absolutely nasty backcourt, maybe even better than Michigan. But there is a little bit of chance that this front court just has a few more warts. And that leads Michigan State a little bit more vulnerable on some nights.
You told me before we started the show, you're getting into your conference tiers. Is that the three that's in your top tier, or do you have another school? Are you thinking there's another school that could enter that top tier with the Big Ten?
I don't have another team in that top tier, but I do have some contenders. The first one I think would be Nebraska, you know, with Braden Frager back and Price Sanford back. I think those two guys are just two linchpins of what that group is. And Sam Ormey is a terrific transfer addition that they've gotten out of Belmont. He was on, you know, the Missouri Valley's best team. He shot over 40% from three-point range on four attempts, 6'9". I think he's not Berke Bayuktensel defensively, but he's a whole lot better offensively. So I expect that Nebraska group, especially if Connor Siegen can get back and healthy, to be pretty good offensively. Like, I just think that Fred Hoiberg really knows what he's doing. He's going to be really good. Again, I know the head coach situation, but Ohio State's really talented. Like, again, so Junie Mobley is back. Amari Bynum is back. Anthony Thompson, five-star freshman, awesome. Justin Pippen, been in the Big Ten and before at Michigan, went to Cal, had a really good year. He's good. And then, you know, Ohio State needs to figure out its center situation. They don't really have one that I like, but I do like their role players that they've gotten out of the portal. So they'll be in the mix. You know, I think another team that you're looking at, then the elephant in the room is Indiana, because they have added outstanding talent and they have paid a ton of money for it. Could argue that they're the highest paid roster in the Big Ten, just because of, you know, they had to use all their money in the portal, which is the most expensive place to shop for your groceries in the spring. And but if it comes together, I do think there's a very, very high ceiling for that group, because Marcus Burton can really score. I think there's more meat on the bone for both guys like Darren Harris and Jaden Mustaf, who are high profile recruits that didn't really, you know, put it all together in their first stops. They have an awesome, insane front court that's really, really big, and Aiden Sherrill and Samet Igatoglu. So they're a little bit like, I hate to say it this way, but they're a little bit like the Michigan last year, where it's like, man, you kind of like all of the individual pieces on that roster, but we'll see if it can actually get to that next level.
Who are you not buying?
Yeah, I hate to say it like this, but like the Wisconsin rebuild, I don't think I'm going to be fully in on it. You know, I'm a little nervous about that group, and that's a team that I always kind of want to buy high on. But Owen Foxwell is their new starting point guard. He's not Nick Boyd. Trey Autry and Ian Elmer are their new wings. It's not John Blackwell. So they got Austin Rapp back. They got Nolan Winter back. That's nice to add those two guys, and I think Winter's fantastic and one of the best players in the Big Ten. But Boyd and Blackwell were such a, you know, just an absolute load. That was a top 10 offense last year, and I think this Wisconsin group will shoot a ton of threes, but they're going to be a group that on the nights that the threes aren't falling, they're going to be very, very vulnerable. I could see them getting top 25 votes, but I think there's a chance that they could slip outside the NCAA tournament field, even with an extended, you know, 76 team field next year.
All right, if I told you the Illinois non-conference was Duke, UConn, Missouri, Texas Tech, and we'll throw in Houston and North Carolina, what are the two games you're most excited for?
All of them, they all kind of run together in my head. They're all awesome. Duke and UConn are the two that I think right off the top. UConn is... their backcourt may be the best in the sport. Braylon Mullins and Silas Demery are awesome. Then they go into the portal and do a terrific job in evaling with Nick Kamenia, a guy that I think Illinois liked, and then Najai Hines, their big man. So Terrace Reed is gone, but Najai Hines is like copy and paste of what Terrace Reed turned into. So I think UConn's going to be great. And then Duke, I mean, they may have the highest ceiling in the country. You know, I know a lot of teams are going to put, or a lot of people are going to put Florida as the number one team in the country, but that Duke team is absolutely loaded with talent. The ability to go into the portal and get John Blackwell is awesome, but what they have done on the international market, they have this guy named Joaquim Boumte. I don't know exactly how to say that yet, but he's only 16 years old, and he is phenomenal, just absolutely phenomenal. Pass, dribble, shoot at 6'11". There is a chance he could be the number one pick in a couple years, that they just got him from FC Barcelona. So he's a big-time player, but elite backcourt that they have. They've recruited internationally insanely well. They retain Patrick Gongba. They retain Caden Boozer. They retain Dame Sarr. They retain Caleb Foster. Like, sign me up.
It's like where are all these mids going? Like, Daron Rippey Jr. is a five-star, right? Where's he playing? John Blackwell, how many shots is he getting? Drew Sharnowski, phenomenal transfer addition out of Belmont, right? Like, this is an actual 11 deep team, but how does that work in practice? Whenever you put these kind of rosters together is always my biggest concern. I'm surprised all these guys signed up to play on the same team.
I'm stunned all of these guards are still here. I think a lot of people are stunned in the industry that all of these guards are still here, but it's, again, first world problem. And John Shire, to his credit, even with some of those like late season meltdowns in the tournament, he's done a really good job throughout the years of getting really good players to buy into smaller roles. And I think if they do that with this group, like, they got a chance to be absolutely nasty. So that Duke Illinois game, like, Final Four preview, I think that could be in the range of potential outcomes.
Yeah, and UConn, Illinois gets a third chance at it, or I guess, what, fourth chance to try and slay the dragon there. What a program that is. Isaac Trotter, CBS Sports. Go read his stuff there. Isaac, you're the goods, man. Always appreciate the time.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right, great stuff as always from Isaac Trotter. He is the goods, and you can check out all his stuff at cbssports.com. Tomorrow on the podcast, I got Scott Docterman from The Athletic talking big picture college football and Illinois football. We'll dive into why is the college football playoff expansion talks happening yet again? What does that mean for college football? What does that mean for a program like Illinois? Also get his thoughts on where we're going with pay for play and the expense of rosters nowadays in college football, and just what he thinks the storylines are heading into the Big Ten season. I was able to catch up with three Illinois players at White Sox night. It should be Illini night at the White Sox game all the time, because the White Sox just put the hammer on the Minnesota Twins in a 15-2 win. My wife and I got to go there. My wife got to meet Brett Bielema for the first time, and got to catch up with Andre Lovett, TJ McMillan, and Pat Farrell. Have some stories in the coming days up about those guys, but they're excited about taking on bigger roles for the Illini and some changes. Obviously, a lot of changes in the program, but got some insight from Pat and TJ about what's happening in the trenches with so much turnover at both the offensive line and defensive line. And Andre Lovett, what he's learning from guys like Matthew Bailey and Xavier Scott and Mac Rosetich, guys who've been in the program for a long time. But these are some of the early in-state wins Brett Bielema had, and now these guys are taking on bigger roles. And I thought these guys representing the Illini at White Sox, at the White Sox game for Illini night, was kind of a sign of that, that this wave, this early in-state recruiting wins, these guys are now kind of elevating into bigger roles in this program. So it was fun to catch up with those guys. We'll have more content on that coming up in the coming days. But for Isaac Trotter, I'm Jeremy Warner. Thank you guys for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. And check us out on YouTube if you don't already. Hit that subscribe button down below if you're watching live on YouTube right now. Subscribe to us. Hit the notifications bell. That helps us out a lot. But everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.